Warning, this episode of Ohio is on Fire contains strong opinions and viewpoints that belong to the host and guests that appear on Ohio is on Fire. This show contains entertainment and honesty that reaches extreme levels. Please do not try this at home.
Tyrants did it. Hitler took the guns. Stalin took the guns. Mao took the guns. Fidel Castro took the guns. Hugo Chavez took the guns. And I'm here to tell you, 1776 will commence again if you try to take our firearms.
My name is Elizabeth Holford, and I'm the executive
director of Equality Ohio. I have a First
Amendment. Equality Ohio.
And these officers want me to leave this position just because you got cameras.
Equality Ohio.
Can you believe it?
Witnesses say during a heated confrontation, a health care reform opponent had his pinky finger bitten off when he stuck it in a health care reformer supporter's face. Police say the 65-year-old man picked up his finger and drove himself to Los Robles Hospital, where they're now trying to reattach it. Police tonight are searching for the biter who ran from the scene.
Enough! Silence! I can't take no more!
Fire! 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 Fire!
Let's just talk. Listen, I'm sorry. You're highly professional at what you do. Get here for me!
Fire! 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 It might just be me out of line, but no, this is the show where Ohio froze down. Ohio is on fire. I am the host, Daniel Diesel. We are live here in Dayton, Ohio, here at Wright State University. This is episode 173 of Ohio is on Fire, the show. And we have a great show for you tonight. I think it's going to be a great show. Hope the audience at home will agree it's going to be a great show. My guest for the evening, he'll be on at 7 o'clock. He's not on yet, and he's locked out. I will get to him in just a minute. Adrian Cosby. He is a stand-up comedian, a skateboarder, and the actor. He's a guy that loves life. But I'm going to have him on at close to 7 p.m. tonight. He'll be my guest interview of the week. And, of course, I got music. I'll have local music showcase, and I'll have OMVP. So stay tuned for that. I got to start the show. I got some things to get off my chest. I know there's always these big major holidays, you know, Christmas, 4th of July, Thanksgiving, all the good stuff. But I don't think you knew this. There's other holidays that take place during a given year. And I like to call them silly little holidays because it is true. Every day is a holiday. And you guys should know about this. And I'm doing this show on a Monday, the live show on Monday. Of course, when you hear this in podcast form, it could be some other day of the week. But I want to talk about Monday, September 24th. There's a lot of cool holidays that a lot of people don't know about. And I'll tell you about them right now, and I'll tell you what they mean and how you would celebrate these holidays. First one I want to talk about is Punctuation Day. Yes, Punctuation Day. It means that when you write a letter, or when you make a statement, you got to be excited. And also, you got to function a sentence correctly. Like, one example that I was given was, the man likes to cook his wife and his dog. Now, if you don't put a punctuation there, it'll sound like he wants to cook his wife and dog. But if you put a comma in between cooked and then his wife and then a comma after his dog, Or actually, you wouldn't put a comma after his wife because that would be a carry on. You gotta put the commas in the right spot, and that way it'll sound like he likes to cook, and he also likes his wife and he likes his dog. So that's a way to the punctuations are important. And today's punctuation day, so if you don't use your punctuations correctly on this day, you'll be cited a ticket. I'll write you a ticket. And you will not like it. Of course, another holiday that we're celebrating today is Jerry's Jubilee Day. What it is, Jerry's Jubilee is ice cream with hot, warm cherries. And I've had it before. It's actually really good. And of course, a lot of people just like to eat cherry pie with ice cream on it. Call it Cherry Jubilee Pie. So today is the day for Cherry Jubilee lovers. Go out someplace and get you a Cherry Jubilee Pie. And tell everyone that today is Cherry Jubilee Day. Post your pictures on Facebook. And now there's another holiday that is taking place today. It's actually beginning of a whole holiday week. Because, yes, there are silly holiday weeks. Today is International Happiness at Work Week. It means that whenever, wherever you work at, wherever you volunteer at, you need to be happy. And this is my place where I volunteer to do this radio show every Monday night. And dang it, I'm happy. Happy, happy, joy, joy, happy, happy, joy, joy. So I am celebrating this holiday to the fullest. I sure am. And so those are the three holidays taking place today. I normally just talk about them, the ones that are taking place while I'm broadcasting the show. There is another silly holiday that I really need to talk about. And it's actually going to happen tomorrow. And I can't believe it's tomorrow already. This holiday, it is none other than National Comic Book Day. Yes. If you love comic books like I do, tomorrow is the day for it. Get your collection out, read every book that you own, and give your comic book a hug. Because tomorrow's National Comic Book Day, go to your local shop, buy a comic book, and tell your comic book salesperson how much you appreciate him or her. Or dress up as Spider-Man. What you need to do is to celebrate both. You got to celebrate all four of these holidays I just talked about. You need to dress up in a Batman costume. Go to your workplace. Also bring in Cherry Jubilee pies to all your employees. And you need to have a punctuation sign marked on your hand. Of course, if you're Batman, you might have gloves on. So take off your gloves. Have an exclamation point on both your hands and tell people, listen, I'm celebrating Punctuation Day, Cherry Jubilee Day, International Happiness at Work Week, and National Comic Book Day. And I'm going to tell you right now, these holidays are actually important because if you not do either one of these four things at all, I'm going to find out about it because I'm the silly holiday police. I'm going to come get you, get my nightstick. I'm going to whack you one. This band I'm going to showcase now, it was actually the request from the band's lead performer, James Crabtree. He approached me about this, and I took a listen, and it's a really good collection of songs. It's from his band, A Voice of Your Own. Of course, they're from the Dayton, Ohio area. I'm going to play two tracks from their recent releases on Bandcamp they released this past summer. The first track I'm going to play is Automatic Vampire. I said that wrong. Automatic Vampire Machine Gun. It was a long title, and that sounds scary. So I'm going to play that, then after that, I'll play Her White Dress.
Soldier without any army gun. You're all hung on to white bullet head.
We are back live with Ohio is on fire. It is now time for everyone's favorite segment. It's now time for OMVP. That stands for Ohio's Most Valuable Pedestrian. That's me playing the imaginary horn. But let me tell you what OMVP is in case you don't know already. I've done a bunch of these. But OMVP is a shout out to someone or a group of people who have something to do with the state of Ohio, whether they live in Ohio, maybe they have relatives, or they just stopped by and did something really weird, but in a good way. And of course, there's always a backstory to OMVP when we do these. So I'm going to get to that story now to introduce OMVP for this episode. But this article comes from the HeraldDispatch.com. Over in West Virginia, but it is about an Ohio college. But this article is called Ohio Southern Campus to his opioid response training. All right, so let's get to the article. I probably said it wrong. Ironton, Ohio. Ohio University Southern is hosting two workshops on Friday, September 21st, in response to the region's opioid crisis. The sessions will provide training on screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment, or SBIRT. Of course, this event has already happened as I'm doing this show on the 24th. But this workshop seeks to provide strategies for appropriate response to individuals affected by drug abuse. SBIRT is an evidence-based approach which promotes universal screening to identify use, early risk, and abuse, and appropriate intervention. Lynn O'Connell. She is a doctor and clinical coordinator of the Miss Burt Project at University Marshall, is the workshop's presenter. So she's coming over from Marshall and coming over to the Southern campus of Ohio University to do this. Well, she did. This happened 3 days ago, of course. Let me skip for this article because it's actually pretty lengthy. I'll get to her quotes because, there's someone else I should talk about. Silly me. Nicole Pennington, dean of the Southern campus, is a member of the Ohio University Opioid Task Force. She said it is important for the regional campus to provide education and training regarding the opioid epidemic in Southeast Ohio. And this is a quote from Pennington. The Southern campus and partners like Marshall's SBIRT initiative must work together as the region strives to combat the current drug crisis. Here's another quote from her. As a participant in the Lawrence County Recovery Coalition, we wanted to bring Dr. O'Connell's training to Ohio University Southern as a resource to the community, said Sarah Diamond Burroway, Director of External Relations and Workforce Success. Of course, the workshop happened this past Friday, but they look to do more in the future. And if you want to be involved, you go to workforcesuccess@ohio.edu. And once again, that's the Southern campus of Ohio University. And of course, you can call them at 740-533-4593. Yes, they want you to call it. They want you to know about it. So it's fine. I just said their number on the air. So if you call that number, you're not going to get some weirdo yelling at you. They're not going to go, Layla, get back in your cell. Don't make me get the hose. That will not happen if you call that number. This next artist I'm going to showcase, they are the Grand Elation Band. They are from Bradford, Ohio. This was another band that reached out to me and asked me to listen to their stuff as they released it this past June. And it sounds really good. And of course, one of the artists, he's been in the band in the past. He was in the band Cinderholm, and I've played their music in the past. So that was a good requisite for me to consider this music. And so I'm going to go ahead and play. I'm going to play two tracks from these guys, the Grand Elation Band. The first track I'll play will be I Know What I Know. And then after that, I'm going to play Bigger Pictures. Play just two tracks, and we'll be back with more Ohio is on Fire, the show. We'll be right back.
chewing on my hopes again. Greased up ropes and cinnamon, losing grip of wholesome bitter spice. All the things just grow so bland, deceived by a sleight of hand. Discontent will just have to suffice. I know what I know, but it don't mean nothing.
We are live with Ohio is on fire. I'm with my special guest of the evening. He is a stand-up comedian, and he does a lot of cool things. Along with being a stand-up comedian, he does a lot of cool things in the area. But he is one only, Adrian Cosby. Say hello, sir.
Hello. How are we doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to see you, Adrian. Thank you for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is, I graduated from Wright State, so it's
good. Oh, I didn't know that. When'd you graduate?
Well, let's see. I guess I finished my classes in 2012. I was supposed to walk in the winter of 2013, but I never made it to that ceremony.
Oh, okay.
I was on the road. Oh, I was on the road doing comedy, and so I was like, well, I guess I graduated and got a job.
Excellent.
It wasn't quite that simple, but...
Well, I didn't know that about you, but there was something else I didn't know about you, that you're also a skateboarder.
See?
Yeah, snowboarding and skateboarding. You do some tricks, I hear. I want to know, what's your skill level?
Well, you know, I skate. So basically, I got back into skateboarding about last summer. And it was because I got into snowboarding, re-got back into snowboarding the winter before that. And I was putting away my snowboard, and I was feeling this like massive depression.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I could go buy a skateboard. And so I just, and like, that was the thing. Like, when I was a kid, I would go through skateboards really fast.
Yeah.
Because I was a bigger kid, but I couldn't afford to replace them when I needed to.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm an adult now, and even as a comedian who doesn't make a lot of money, I can afford skateboarding. Like a baller, I can afford skateboarding. And so,
man,
I went and bought a new deck, and it took me a couple of months to kind of really figure out, you know, what kind of deck I needed and what kind of wheels I needed to be using and what kind of skateboarding I even wanted to be doing. And as it turns out, really what I really enjoy when it comes to skateboarding and snowboarding is when I have the park to myself, or when there's just like one or two other people there and you don't really have to like wait for runs. And that's the other beauty about skateboarding as an adult, is that I can go to the park at 7 a.m., you know, when nobody else is there.
Man, that's what, 7 in the morning, huh?
Well, not always. But if you go in the summertime, anything after 8 a.m. to 9 p.m.,
it's pretty busy.
It's busy and it's hot. It's so hot that it's almost like, there's been a few times where I was skating and I didn't realize it, but I was like about to pass out because like I run and I work out and stuff like that. But with that, it's like your heart rate's been up for a while. You can kind of tell when you're about to tap out. But with like skateboarding, I'm having so much fun that I'm just like, oh my gosh, my heart is pounding. And then I realize, like, oh, I got to take a break.
Do you watch the X Games?
You know, I will if I catch it on, but I don't ever make a point of it. I don't have DVR anymore.
Oh, okay.
When I did have DVR, though, anything that was snowboarding or skateboarding, I would record.
Yeah.
And so that was mostly, though, like Nike Street League is what I remember watching the most of. And then like the Burton Alpine Classic and things like that. But it would always be like snowboarding and skateboarding probably a little bit more so than snowboarding, hasn't really caught up in real time to the entertainment value on TV if it's not an Olympic year. During the Olympics, snowboarding gets a fair shake.
You know, yes, what I mean? It does.
With everything else. But in the other years, it's kind of like highlights.
Yeah.
You don't really get like, it's not like, it's the same with golf.
Yeah.
It's just too much to see that you would be able to air it all. So you kind of have to keep it to the best of clips, which I get.
But yeah.
Snowboarding is the one thing that if somebody was like, you know, it's the one thing that would keep, that could keep me from everything else. If I made enough money from doing comedy, like if I got like an HBO special or Showtime and they paid me like more money than they were supposed to, and I could live in Colorado or some, if I could just chase snow around the globe and literally live off of a minimal subsistence,
yeah,
you probably would never see me again, because the happiest, at most peace, at most zen I feel is snowboarding. It's
awesome.
I never get sick of it.
Well, let me ask you, in your skiing endeavors, have you ever broken a bone? Has anything ever gone wrong?
See, I've never technically broken a bone. However,
okay,
I have broken my teeth.
Ooh.
And I have had back surgery.
Okay.
Where I had to have some pieces. I had a ruptured disc and they removed like three pieces that were like tickling a nerve so much that I couldn't use my right leg. So, but both of those things were not skateboarding or snowboarding related. So,
okay.
The worst thing I think, I mean, I hate to admit this, but I think I had two MRIs last year because of skateboarding injuries. Not that like I sustained and I was like, oh, I'm so hurt. But like I, over time, I was like, the palms of my hand shouldn't hurt like this for weeks and weeks and weeks. And so I was like, let me go ahead and get these checked out.
Yeah.
And it didn't show anything. I think it was just supposed to, you know, at my age, falling isn't as graceful as it was when I was younger.
I imagine. I kind of feel the same too, because I'm also in my early 30s. I realize I can't take a bump on the grass like I used to.
Yeah.
So that's, I feel you there. And you know what? I think you fucked out injury-wise, because in the past I've seen these skate mixtapes on YouTube, and it gets really bad. Like one guy like fell while he was at a skate park. He was like high in the air, and one of his legs it literally bent to the side. Like it was, I don't even talk about it. It might make people at home sick. So I've seen that. Luckily, it sounds like that's never happened to you, where your leg was bent in half.
No,
or you lost, or you lost a limb.
No, not yet. But no. I mean,
don't say I don't want that to happen to you ever.
Well, I'm open to the possibility. I will say this about falling on a skateboard or a snowboard: it's the moment right before you slam. The moment of like, am I going to pull this off? or it might even be the moment when you're like, I did not take off into the air the way I meant to. Is this going to work out? It's almost like this no man's land of not knowing if you're going to have a really hard slam or if you're going to be able to just kind of tuck into it and ride it out.
Yeah.
It's that not knowing that is the most quintessential feeling of life that I've ever experienced.
All right.
In terms of like, that's how you know you're alive. In those moments, it's just a fraction of a second that you have this like piece of like, I meant to do this, and if it goes south, I have no one to blame but myself. I imagine it's the same feeling that you get when you jump out of a plane and you pull the ripcord, and you don't know if the chute's actually going to open.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean. And then it does open. And you're like, okay, it's just like that few seconds. You know, I used to be a cliff diver. I tried to be a cliff diver when I was in my early 20s in Hawaii. And it was real cliffs.
Oh, boy.
And that was part of the thrill, was like I could dive, but there was like something about diving past rocks that were like flying past your face that made it really extra alive feeling. And I think that's what I first started.
Well, that sounds awesome. I'll have to take your word for it, because I'm not a skateboarder myself. That just sounds freaking awesome.
It's one of those things, man, where I don't know what compels other people to get on a skateboard, but for me, it's something zen.
The thrill.
Yeah,
it's thrill of life.
It's thrilling.
Curious, so that's something new I'm going to know about you, but I've heard about you for a few years, and you're mostly known in the area as a stand-up comedian, and you're a really funny guy. I've seen you perform, I think, three different times, but I want to know, who is your mentor in stand-up comedy?
Well, so you have like the people that you look up to before you've ever even started.
Yeah.
And for me, I think the first thing I ever checked out of the public library in Yellow Springs, where I'm from, was a Stephen Wright tape.
Okay.
And then it was like George Carlin.
Mm-hmm.
And then Eddie Murphy. And, you know, and it was one of those things where I, you know, that's what was funny to me growing up. And I've always, I think I knew I wanted to be a comedian since I was probably 8 or 9 years old, but I didn't really know how to act on it until I was a full grown adult.
Absolutely.
But once I got into comedy, then having people that actually can tell you, this is how you need to do this, and this is how you should approach this, and, you know, always count your money before you, you know, when they hand it to you while they're still standing, you know, like just like the little tiny nuances.
Yeah.
There was nobody in my life that was more instrumental in that regard than this gentleman named Vince Morris, who's also an Ohio comedian.
Yes, I've heard of him.
But he, you know, he took me on the road when I was, before I was ready, and he would, you know, he just always had those like mentor gems of wisdom. I haven't met anybody in all, you know, I've been almost 10 years now, I guess, but I've never met anybody else that had that kind of built-in mentor mentality towards me. So that was nice, because even though I was an adult, Vince isn't that much older than me. It was in comedy, you're starting this weird thing. You feel like a child.
Oh yeah.
You're doing comedy, but when you're around people that have been doing it way longer, you say things that sound like a 5-year-old would say.
It would feel that way. I mean, like, I think of anything else, you're taking your baby steps, and you need someone to teach you big steps. You got
leagues. To kind of like act as if more than anything. But it's also one of those things that nothing replaces time in. It's like, it truly is like being in a union, in that some people do a lot with a very small amount of time, and some people do very little with a very large amount of time.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, the longer you've been exposed to this crazy life that is being a comedian, the more adept you are at either moving through it or playing the game that's there. It's not, you know, nobody's born with the kind of access that it takes to have a huge career in comedy, unless you just lucked out because you were on a TV show when you were a kid or something like that.
Yeah,
and even then you still have to be funny when you show up to the club, because the first thing they tell you when you show up to a club is who was there the week before and how funny they were.
Yeah, but I've noticed that as well. Now, one of the places I saw you perform at, and a place that I know you performed many, many times over the years, was Rocky's Pizza Rain.
Mm.
Of course, earlier this year, it closed down and it ended their traditional monthly comedy show, which was on Monday nights. Because you was there a lot. And what were your favorite memories of Rocky's Pizza Rain?
Man, my first memory of Rocky's was like before I even started really doing comedy. So I was thinking about doing comedy, and I'm hanging out around comedy, and I've been doing improv. So the people that were in my improv class were talking about this show that was on, that had happened the night before on Monday night at this pizza place, and it was packed, and it was kind of, it was like this energy about it, and it was like this thing, and I was like, wow, what is this thing? I had no idea. I know that LaFino's Shopping Center, I've known it since I was 4 years old.
Yeah.
But I never knew there was a pizza place back there. And
me neither. I noticed it's tucked back there.
I think I went there like a month later. They only did the show like once a month. And I went there and I watched. And it was one of those places that, you know, in its heyday, it was very, very good. Mm-hmm. And then it started to have sort of like a once a quarter, every other show or every third show would be really, really good. And then the other ones would be okay, but just not. It was always very crowd dependent. If spectators came who weren't just comedians, it would be an amazing show. And if it was just kind of like comedians and people that were like, not really.
Yeah.
I didn't know there's going to be comedy here. Then it would not be so good. But I remember one time with Jeff Tate, who's he's an LA comic, but he's from Cincinnati.
Yes.
And he was just destroying the room. You would have thought it was, you know, Nerd Melt or whatever, any kind of underground LA show. And this, and then he's, because he's a liberal, he started saying something very liberal. And this lady who was not a liberal was like, that's not right. That you're not, we're not going to listen and we won't be. He's like, lady, get up, leave. There's people, there's 40 people standing on the wall that would love your seat. And I was like, oh my God. And I just remember thinking like, it wasn't even really a matter of whether or not I agreed with what he was saying or what she was saying. She shouldn't have started yelling out in the middle of a comedy show just because she didn't agree with what the comedian was saying. But the way he handled it was just so masterful. And it was still, I think that might have been before I really started doing comedy. I might have done like an open mic once or something at that point. But when you're wanting to do comedy and you're looking at it that closely, it seems so far away. It seems like you want to be a movie star, but you're just watching a movie. You know what I mean? It's almost, you're like, you're on the set, but you're still just watching it through the, you're not in it. And really all it takes to really be in it is to just keep throwing yourself into the fire. And that's why there's a huge washout rate. And there's a huge, like, you know, certain people never break above a certain level because you can get very comfortable not doing very well at comedy. It's like being a poker player, but the stakes are so low that you can afford to play in every game.
Yeah.
You can stay doing open mics 3 or 4 nights a week, for 7 or 8 years, and it would feel exactly like it does to be getting paid, except you're not getting paid.
I want to ask you this: have you in all the stand-up comedy shows you've done, have you accidentally stole a joke before?
Well, I will say I've never accidentally stolen a joke, but I've purposefully stolen jokes.
Okay. Interesting.
I've done this thing where, so I came up with two other comedians, I came up with probably like 20 comedians.
Yes.
But there's about 5 comedians that I am still friends with that if in a situation I'm talking to somebody and it's organic, but something that they've said in the audience leads me to where one of my compadres' punchlines or taglines to a joke is the perfect response in that moment.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like we all have this sort of unwritten rule that like, yeah, you gotta take, because the one thing is like, if I'm in that moment and Chris Allen's bit comes to my head.
Yeah.
As a perfect response, I'm probably not going to come up with my own response because I'm flooded with this perfect response from somebody else.
Of course.
So it's like you either drop it and let it go.
A callback.
Or you use your friend's callback. And to be perfectly honest, I think the audience, I think the other comedian, there's probably some comedians that would like want to cut your throat for doing that, but that's why you don't do it. You know what I mean? And you also like for... I think that's a pretty common phenomenon when you've been hanging out with somebody and you're helping them write jokes and you're hearing their set over and over and over again. But the times that I've actually done that, I mean, in 8 years now, I'd say I've probably done it 3 or 4 times.
All right.
And I think every single time I get on the phone, as soon as I'm done, like, dude, I just used your tagline. It worked perfectly. Here's where I did it.
Yeah.
So, because another time I did a joke, me and Chris Allen, who's a good friend of mine.
Yes.
We both did a joke on the same topic. He didn't watch my set. If he had, he probably wouldn't have done the joke on the topic. Even though he had a completely different punchline, the audience didn't laugh at his joke because it was like, we've already heard this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it wasn't like his joke wasn't funny.
Yeah.
It just seemed like, and so it's like, that's why you kind of like have to be uber sensitive to what the audience is listening.
Now, based on what you just described, like, you know, you do a callback to like a friend of yours joke or whatever you heard during the show. Now, there's other extreme cases like Carlos Mencia, and of course, Amy Schumer's been accused of stealing jokes.
Sure.
But what do you think's the big difference between telling a joke that's been told many times before, like among friends, it's a little bit intimate, and stealing a joke like on purpose, like say stealing someone's act that helped you make millions of dollars, a la Carlos Mencia.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
So, like Carlos, what I would say he was, and I don't even like to use the word guilty, but what he did very effectively for a very long time before people decided to pay a closer attention.
Yeah.
to what he was doing was just reappropriating jokes. He would just take a Cosby bit and make it a Mexican on what. And even Cosby's bits, they could have been appropriated by almost any culture.
Okay.
It just takes a cultural perspective to make something funny. And that's what Carlos Mencia was doing, was just adding. And Carlos Mencia is not even like Mexican. That's the funniest part about it. But he is Latin American, I guess we could say.
Yes.
And I don't fault him for anything that he did. I feel bad for him. I've met him. He was a super nice guy. He was super aware of how people perceive him.
Yes.
So he wasn't like aggressive or standoffish.
Yeah.
He was just like, this is just me, you know? And if I left my notebook, I mean, I was like maybe a year and a half into comedy or something. I left my like thick notebook of jokes.
Yes.
In the green room all weekend while he was at the Dayton Funny Bone.
Oh,
and
no.
I didn't realize it till like that Monday where I was like, I left my notebook in there. And I was thinking like,
And Carlos Mencia was there and he's part of this controversy.
The problem is that even if he did steal all of my jokes, all he would have done, if there was 500 jokes in there, he might have taken two and made them real jokes. You know what I mean? That it was,
or appropriate, like to make it about his Mexican culture.
He would have just finished whatever it was. I mean, everything that was in that notebook, if I'm going to be completely objective about it now, it was garbage. Everything in the, just for the simple fact that I didn't know how to write a joke back then. And, and even if I did know how to write a joke, I didn't know how to perform a joke. And that's really what it is that like a real comedian, and he is a real comedian, regardless of how you feel about how he comes up with the material, it's the way you get it out that has people laugh at it.
Yes.
And that's like that's not something everybody can do. I mean, it's different.
Yes.
Some people can do it in a classroom. Some people can do it in a group of friends.
Okay.
You know, at a bar. Some people can be the comedian in a certain setting.
Yeah.
But when you put a microphone in somebody's hands and put them on a stage, what you have to live up to is so much bigger than just being a funny guy at the bar or the funny guy at the water cooler. It's not to say that like what I'm doing is like hard. It's just it's not for the faint of heart, because it's like the failure, the amount of times you have to fail before you get good at it is just very, very high.
All right, that's a very interesting response. I mean, everyone's entitled their opinion. I mean, I don't hate Carlos Mencia, but I definitely heard about the stealing thing, and that's actually a new way of looking at it. The way he does it is more about appropriation. So I mean, you've probably gotten debates about that. Some people probably say, he should burn in hell.
And I think that there's also the type of person that would say anybody should burn in hell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's probably.
Am I the kind of person that gets outraged at things? I'm personally not the kind of person that gets, I put things to kind of like a basic test. Like, did a human do it? And if so, I'm probably not going to be that shocked or amazed by it.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless we're talking about like breaking the land speed barrier on foot or something like super extraordinary, you know, flapping your wings so hard that your hands so hard that you fly or something, something super extraordinary. Otherwise, people do the craziest things for the weirdest reasons.
Yeah.
And it's never that surprising. You know, they're like, this man married a goat and has been living in matrimony for 17 years.
Yeah.
He's not the first one. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, speaking of doing something crazy, I have to bring this up. Uh-oh. You are a stand-up comedian.
I am.
And your last name is Cosby.
It is.
So I have to ask you, when you was a kid, what was it like having that last name?
It was literally, I don't want to say that it made me feel special, but it was the type of thing that it was the first time I ever realized I need a response for this. Because every single time I would tell somebody, I would have to tell somebody my name.
Yeah.
I would always just say Adrian. And they'd say, what's your last name? And I'd say Cosby. And they'd say, excuse me? And I'd say Cosby. And they'd be like, like Bill? And
just like Bill.
And any relation? And and so it's just one of those things where I realized, like, I would be like, I don't know. And I just realized it was just so much easier to just say no. Because one, I don't know. And if there is some sort of genealogical connection that's been made, because I come from a huge line of Cosbys. And when I say like my dad's one of 13 children. And I think almost every single one of his siblings had children. Or so it's like, it's just, it's a huge line of these Cosbys. And so if one of them is like traced it down, I haven't heard about it. But the biggest thing is I've never met the man. I don't know anybody that's that close to him or has met him or anything like that. So I just say no. And when I first started doing comedy, it was like the first thing I was worried about was, am I going to have to change my name? And then the story has been broken. I knew about these allegations when I was a kid because my mom followed.
Oh, know, the allegations of him doing these.
Yeah, yeah. She was like, and that's why my mom was like, you should never let anyone to believe that you're related to this man. This man's not a good person. He's been accused of this, this, and this. And I was like, really? She's like, yeah, he's been accused of it. We don't know if it's real or not, but he's been accused of it a number of times.
And man, so, it must have been really hidden because the first I heard of it was after that Hannibal joke when he was talking about, you know,
made it go viral.
That's what made it go big, but I didn't even hear about Cosby doing all that.
I remember seeing it on Facebook a few years before that, just like, and it was always one of those things where, you know, I think what it was like the kind of, you know, I don't want to say the beginning stages of the Me Too movement, because I would say that the Me Too movement started.
Yeah, a few years after that.
I would say it started in the 60s.
Oh, well, that's
and it's just
true,
been
yeah.
like snowballing, like a very slow snowball. Not in a negative connotation of a snowball, but it's just been building and building.
Yeah.
And it got a lot bigger right before the Cosby thing broke for the final time.
Mm-hmm.
But it had been out there and they had done the Cosby camp. I think the whole zeitgeist was just one of those things that, yes, he's a very rich man and people want to take things from him. And yes, he's probably had affairs, but that's what rich men do.
Yeah.
And nobody really knew how nefarious it was until people started digging. And really, and I think that the internet is the great equalizer when it comes to putting people under a microscope. And I don't even mean that to be a good thing, because I think if you put anybody under that, I'm not going to say anybody, but I think that if you put the average person under a very close microscope, you are going to find a lot of things that are very unpleasant. And it might just be that they kick their cat in the morning, or that they
kick their cat. Oh man.
Or that they, you know, watch their neighbor get undressed one time when they could have looked away, or, you know what I mean? It's just one of those things where it's like, Bill Cosby was so rich and famous at a time when black people had to enter the places that they were playing through the kitchen. They couldn't go through the front door. They had to use a different bathroom.
Yes.
And he was being treated like a king amongst other white people, even treating him like a king.
He was the man back years ago. And a lot of people say he's one of the greatest comedians ever.
He's just amazing. We treated him like a king, and then he behaved like a king. And we're like, hey, why are you acting like that? It's like, well, how did we expect him to act? And I would say that, yes, better people than him have acted more nobly with that much power. But I'm of the school of thought that that kind of power will corrupt the average person.
Now, I think he should be thankful that the only thing he's ever been officially accused of in the court of law was the 2004 deal in Temple, in which it was actually an article today. The judge said he's likely facing 3 years in jail, so he will have 3 years of jail. And I mean, which I think that's more than fair, but although I wouldn't have been upset if he gotten 10, because I mean definitely rape. If you rape someone, that really bothers me. Like, I think he should at least get 5, depends on the degree of rape. He should have gotten 5, but he's getting 3. But I don't want to get into semantics over it.
The other thing is that he
could have murdered someone. It could have been way, way worse.
Yeah.
Someone could have had a heart attack. If he did do the pill thing, which as he's been accused of by a lot of these women, some people could have bad hearts.
Sure.
They could have had a heart attack from those pills. He could be facing 50 years in jail for murder. So it could be way worse. It wasn't good that what he did, but it could be worse. Absolutely.
I think that, for one, it's not, you know, I'm not on the jury. I wasn't in there to hear all the evidence or anything. Yeah. But if it's just one of those situations where it's like he was convicted in a court of law, and if it's what they say it is, it's kind of hard for me to think that he's not supposed to serve some time. You know what I mean? And it seems like I would have rather him serve it. I would have rather this all came out when it wasn't so tragic to put, like, because there's something sort of just tragic about putting an 80-year-old person in prison.
The future of music, the future of sports, the future of broadcasting is all right here on WWSU 106.9 FM, Dayton's right choice. And listen to us 24/7 on www.wwsu1069.org.
And we are back live with Ohio's on Fire. I am still here with Adrian Cosby, and we're going to have some fun in the state of Ohio, line things up a little bit. We're going to play a game called 12 Questions, which is actually derived from 21 Questions. But since I'm live on the radio and I have so much time to do this show, we've shortened it to 12 Questions. Me and Adrian, we're going to test each other. It'll be fun. The subject tonight is 90s movies. What it is, Adrian has to guess my 90s movie within 12 questions, and then he'll test me. I will ask 12 questions to guess what this movie is. So we're going to do that, have some fun. Of course, once again, calls here 937-775-5555 if you wish to talk to us, perhaps be part of this game. So you have that. And of course, I do have a lot of listeners at home, so thank you for listening. It's been a great evening so far. So let's get to this game. All right, so yeah, you have to guess mine first, Adrian. Go ahead and ask your first question about what my 90s movie is.
Question about the questions. Am I allowed to ask any questions, or do they have to be like yes or no answer questions?
It can be, it can make it so I can describe it. And of course, a lot of these questions are yes, no, but like you can ask me like the location, like what was the location of the setting of the film. If I know what that is.
All right. Well, let me ask you this right away. What's the genre of the film?
I would say a romantic comedy.
Okay. So it's from the 90s. What city does it take place in?
The setting is New York City.
Okay. So is this Tom Hanks in the movie?
Yes.
Okay, so
good question.
That would be like
you got 9 questions left, and you're getting warm. So, you might get this.
Is Meg Ryan in the movie?
Yes.
Is it When Harry Met Sally? No, that's not it. It's
I'll count that as a. Thing. I was wanting you to get the ask the questions, and then you would guess after the 12th question.
Let me keep going.
Getting really warm.
I think I know the movie. I just can't remember the name of it.
Ask me 7 more questions, and then you can make your guess.
Does Meg Ryan own a bookstore in the movie?
Yes.
Okay, and Tom Hanks works for a bigger bookstore conglomerate that's gonna buy out.
Yes, you got 6 more questions.
Dave Chappelle is in it with them.
Oh, you got this. I think you've nailed this. Like
you've
got mail. Yeah, you got.
Okay.
You need 12 questions.
Well, the
that
thing
took
about
you 7
is my brain's not as sharp as it once was, and I was definitely picturing all the scenes of the movie, but I couldn't.
I was going to give you a clue if you hadn't dominated the game like you did. Well, I was going to say one of the actors in the film has a building named after him here on campus. Of course, that's Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
But you immediately get, oh, it's Tom Hanks, and then you, yeah. But there you go. Does your movie star Tom Cruise? Is he the star of this film?
No.
No, okay. What genre is this film?
I would say it is like comedy/suspense.
Comedy/suspense. Okay. Comedy. Is the star character really fat?
Not really fat. No, not even not even fat.
Okay, so not that fat. Would help. He might be skinny. Does the main character deal drugs in this film?
No.
Okay, not a drug dealer. Does the in this film, does the male character is he rescuing someone that's been kidnapped during this film?
Yes, so to speak. Yes,
sort of. Was it held against her will, perhaps?
Yes,
it's will. Okay.
Yes. There's definitely an element of like a rescue in the majority of the film.
Okay. Wait. Let me think. All right. Is the star actress Sandra Bullock?
No.
Oh. Okay. That killed my. I got six more. Is Martin Lawrence in this film?
No.
No. Okay. Man, see, if I can guess the actor like you did, I might be on a roll. Oh, here's my eighth question.
Hold on. I'm going to give you a little bit of a hint.
Yeah, give me a hint.
It's a comedy suspense movie. It's only got one major star in the entire film.
Okay.
And he's more known for comedy than
drama.
But he can do it all. But I'll say this, from stand-up to having won an Oscar.
Okay.
He's done it all. But he's the only star, so to speak. I mean, there's other people in the movie that should be like, oh, this guy's, I've seen him and do this and this. He is the number one star in the movie.
Okay, does this movie involve pets? Is there a lot of animals in this
movie? There's animals in the movie.
All right, how many questions? Do I have three left?
You have four left,
okay. Does the main character have a family with wife and kids in this?
The main character does not have a wife or kids.
Okay. Involves a lot of animals. Okay. All right, does the main character dress up in a costume to disguise himself during the film? Is he in any costume?
Yes, very much so.
Okay, two more. Does he have a relative that's gay? I'm thinking what might be.
I will say that I don't know.
You don't know.
You're talking about like in the movie.
In the movie, yeah. Does the character I guess a relative of the character, is that relative gay?
I don't think so, and I don't think, even if I'm missing it for some reason, I don't think it's material enough to the story. I think of whatever you're thinking of.
Yeah,
this isn't it. I've seen this movie so many times, I can't even imagine that I would miss that part of it. But no, I don't think that's material to this story at all. Okay. I'll give you one final clue about this movie.
All right.
Is that it is as much fun for not little kids, but children of a maybe older child, nine and above, ten and above maybe.
Yeah.
All the way up to adults.
Okay.
I saw it as an adult in the theaters and thought it was hilarious.
Okay. So funny. Okay, let me ask you this. The star of the film, was he once a VJ on MTV?
No.
No, okay. Well, that eliminates a few. Okay. How many questions do I have left?
I think you have one question.
I have one left. I better make this good. All right. Does the main character kill someone in the film? Does he murder someone?
I don't think any humans die in the movie.
Okay.
I thought you were really onto it when you said a bunch of animals.
Well, I'm going to make my guess because I've narrowed it down based on some of the things you said. Okay, here's my guess. Okay. Your 1990s movie is Jim Carrey's Liar Liar.
No.
Oh, I thought you were going to say yes.
That's so much closer than what I thought you were going to say.
I was going to say Mrs. Doubtfire, but then you said that...
You know what's funny about Mrs. Doubtfire?
Yeah.
If you had gone on that track,
yeah,
you would have narrowed it down.
Okay.
Because it's the same star.
Robin Williams.
Yes.
Okay.
So Mrs. Doubtfire has Sally Field in it, who at the time was arguably a bigger star.
Big star. Pierce Brosnan was in it.
There was a bunch of stars.
I was thinking there's a lot of star power in it.
Okay, so Robin Williams is the star of this movie.
All right. Well, I've had two guesses. I'll do one more guess. I'll probably is it Patch Adams?
No.
All right.
The movie.
I need to be kicked out of here.
Go ahead. Jumanji.
Jumanji. Oh no.
My all-time favorite Robin Williams.
Well, movie. Okay. Well, I'm officially retiring from that game because you nailed it. And it took me 15. You gave me three extra questions.
You know, if I hadn't seen You've Got Mail 150 times because I had this. I lived in Hawaii at the time and I had a descrambler. And so I would get all the pay-per-view movies, but that meant I watched every pay-per-view movie like 100 times.
What are you going to be up to this next month, show-wise, your stamp comedy?
Oh, let's pull out ye old calendar.
He's got a calendar.
I'm off this week. I'm going to be doing some hard partying before Sober October, which starts off at the end of this month, obviously. Okay, so then I'm going to be at the Dayton Funny Bone October 5th. Through the 7th with Sam Morril from New York, who's a very, very funny comedian. And then October 18th through the 21st, I'll be at the Liberty Funny Bone with my good friends Chris Allen and Mark Normand from New York City. And then going into the first week of November, I'll be all the way out west, Colorado, Arizona. You can find all of my dates at my website, CosbyComedy.com. Or you can just type Adrian Cosby into Google and you will find me.
Awesome.
I'm also at Cosby Comedy on Instagram and all other forms of social media.
Yes. And now I hear that you have a podcast. Tell us about your podcast and where we can hear it.
My podcast, Totally Unrelated, also available at totallyunrelated.com or cosbycomedy.com. I have been on a break for the summer, so it's a good time to get caught up, but we're coming back on October 1st.
And, good.
It's just been kind of like a labor of love, kind of like my personal diary. If you were to listen to my podcast, I would say if you've listened to every episode of my podcast, you know more about me than I know about myself.
Excellent.
So,
Well, that's all I have for you this evening, Adrian. Good luck to you on your shows. I might catch another one of your sets sometime, and good luck with everything, man.
Thank you very much.
My name is Joe, and I'm a Wright State alumni, and this is my daughter.
Hi, I'm Anya.
And you are listening to WWSU 106.9 FM, Dayton's right and only choice.
Let's wrap up this episode with the final message. It was actually inspired by the question of the week that's posted by Wright State University, because I'm walking around campus, and then there's like this bulletin board to ask people, what do you judge yourself on? What's the thing or the things that you judge yourself on the most? So I'm going to do it live on the air. I'm not going to post on a wall because I think I'll do this on the radio. I thought it'd be a very interesting final message. So what does Daniel Diesel judge himself the most? I'll try to dig deep. I'm a person that likes to eat. I love food, and my family loves food. But with that, you know, throughout most of my life, I've always had, you know, an issue with having a stomach, perhaps a tad overweight, because I'm not the guy to work out all the time. Like, and even the idea of working out, like going to the gym, pumping iron, that's never excited me. I've done it because I had to really encourage myself to in the past, I've had classes where I had to work out, and I had to do it. I've never been like a Mr. Galactica. One of those guys. With that, I see these people, they make it look so easy. Like, they just hit the gym saying, oh, I gained 10 pounds over the holidays, so I got to go back to the gym and lose that weight within a day or two of just working out. They make it look so easy. And they look, and there's a lot of sexy studs out there, man. On Facebook, flexing the muscle. You know, you got the cute women in their bikinis. Like, ooh, look at me, I'm in shape. They look like they can be on the front of a magazine cover, and that's never been me. I've never had the supermodel body, and I don't know if I want that. I don't know if that means I'm less than a person, but I don't like being fat either. Like, there have been times I've been a tad bit overweight for my liking. So that's something I judge myself on, is my body. I guess my body health is what they call it. I judge myself on that. I judge myself on my creative thinking, because one thing that I think really stands out about me as a person is my ways of coming up with ideas. I have ideas all the time. I write them down. I try to execute them. I sometimes perform them on this radio show. And I second guess myself, because every time I, like, say for every one good idea that I had, like, oh, that was really good, I have four things where I'm like, I don't know, maybe that was a bad idea. So I question my creative abilities, even though people say that this is my calling, that I have ideas that no one else could think of. So that's nice. So I'll base it on that. Like, I'll put myself out of it when I get good compliments. But my ideas, but because I always feel like I have the best ideas. I feel like I have something that can change the world. So that's something else I judge myself on. I judge myself my radio technique, because I want to be good at radio. I want to be the host of my show, pretty much for most of my life. I've already done most of my young adult life. It wouldn't bother me if I did this for the next 30 years. But I wanted to be the best. I probably don't always say the right things. I don't always get things right. Now I want to be one of the best. And part of it, it's up to the person at home listening to me, how I sound. Because I can't judge how I sound. My voice is my voice. I've been told that you can't judge your own radio voice. So I leave it up to others. I can only hope that people don't think that I'm the worst in the world. But I do want to be the best in the world. I want people to think I'm the best. That's something I'm going to be working at for the rest of my life. Doesn't matter how many awards I win, how many compliments I receive. I'll be judging myself on that pretty much for the rest of my life. And the last thing I can think of that I judge myself really hard on is my moral character. Because I'm trying to be the hero. I think I had good people in my life who I looked up to, who had good morals, good character. And I want to be the hero. I say that, I don't know if I always have been the hero. I don't know if I've always done right by the people that I've loved the most, people that have been in my past. Maybe I said something that was inappropriate, and I didn't know it was inappropriate. I just want to be the hero of the situation. I guess I can't guarantee that I am. But I definitely don't want to do what Bill Cosby did, which we discussed Bill Cosby earlier, because that was just really bad personal choice. And I definitely don't want to be a disgraced murderer like Charles Manson and some other known murderers, or those that brainwash others to murder. That's what Charles Manson did. He brainwashed people to murder. Until next Monday night, we'll have Johnny Woods, Dayton, Ohio, WBSU 106.9 FM, of course, anchor.fm/Ohio's on Fire shows. Check out my podcast. That's the way it is.